Hello and welcome to Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering podcast. In this episode, we speak to Emma. She shares her story of coming to adoption and the challenges and experiences of assessment, matching and starting a new life. It's her story and reflects an honest and insightful understanding of her experience. We hope you enjoy it, and if you would like to share your story, please get in touch through Facebook or Twitter.
Okay, I'm Emma, married with two children. We've been adopters or parents for 7 and a bit years now. So partway through the process of learning how to do this, I think.
So can I ask you, starting at the beginning, what brought you to adoption?
We came to adoption because we wanted to have a family. Andy and I met in our later years. We were like early 30s when we met. And we'd always said we wanted to have a family and we wanted to have kids. And one of those weirdly prophetic lines, we always said if we couldn't have our own kids, we'd adopt. But that we'll never need that sort of get out clause. I mean, and I don't mean to disrespect adoption in any way by saying it, but I think at the time we wanted to be parents and we weren't certain how it would go because we were older. And we didn't start trying to have children until we were in our late 30s. Found we couldn't have children and went through the whole infertility experience. And how tricky that was, and they were really encouraging us to go for IVF because we were just hitting that 40 age group. But when we looked at all the statistics, that looked like a lot of expense and very little statistical chance of having a child. But we knew it was invasive, and neither of us actually even really toyed with the idea. Both of us just didn't really fancy doing that. So in the end, we looked at our desire to have children and our inability to have our own, and looked at the fact there were children there who wanted families and needed families to look after them, and thought that might be a good match. And it was as simple as that. We didn't go through a particularly traumatic experience of infertility like a lot of people. Didn't have years of miscarriaging or anything like that. We just tried, failed, ran out of options, and we still desperately felt that we wanted to be a family and be parents and have that experience and provide love and support and learning and everything for some children. Initially, my husband thought three. I kept saying two because I've got two hands, though I wanted one for each hand. I don't know, there was something about two that felt more manageable than three somehow. But I think when we went through the adopter preparation training, we were surprised by how few people wanted more than one child. I think there was 8 of us on the prep groups, and one of the social workers sidled over at one of the breaks and said, "Oh, you're the only people looking to adopt more than one." And I was blown away. It never really occurred to us to start with one and build. We knew there were siblings out there. We knew there were families. And somehow we'd always thought we would, build that in one sort of, not in one fell swoop, that sounds wrong, doesn't it? But that there was a magical combination of finding siblings who needed a home and wanting to have more than one at the same time. So I think as we went through prep, Andy did kind of reconsider his three, kind of sized down and agreed. But I know other people who've sort of went through prep groups thinking of one or two and being convinced by social workers to increase it to three. And I think we'd have struggled with three, being a bit older and less worldly wise and less having had less parenting experience than we maybe believe we did have.
So how did you find the process of, being assessed to be parents?
I it quite refreshing, actually. Well, we had quite a lot of chopping and changing with social workers, and I didn't really get on with the first one as well. I don't know. I found her. There was something about our personality that didn't feel very enthusiastic, or it didn't feel like she was really pushing and supporting us. I don't know. But she basically left shortly before we were supposed to go to panel, and then we discovered that she hadn't done most of the work that needed to be done. I think it was very stressful and things, so we had to start again with someone who was very different in characteristic and style and personality, and we got on really well with her. But actually, yeah, I remember the first set of questions he sent us that we had to answer and type out. And I found it quite cathartic and therapeutic, to be honest. So she gave us 12 questions, and I wrote like 2 sides of A4 for each one. And she basically went, "That's too much. I don't want to know all that." Which made me want to go, "All right, relationship with your mom, sometimes good, sometimes bad." So I kind of got a bit like, "Ooh, shirty about it." But I found it quite interesting to go through that process, to talk with my husband about how we were going to parent, have all those deep, meaningful conversations that maybe we wouldn't have had if we'd have had birth children, and to really get to grips with, I guess, the changes ahead. I think the scariest question I got asked by my social worker was, she kind of just turned around to me and she said, "Okay, Emma, you're going to be at home with the kids 24/7. I want a timetable of what you're going to do." And I kind of just went, "What do you mean a timetable?" So then I started asking my friends on Facebook, "How often do you go to Safe Place? How often do you go to the park? What, you know?" And I put this imaginary timetable together that, bless, very little of it actually became true. But it did make me research things that I didn't know about, like all the little play groups or the things that were going on at the library, like storytelling and things. And at the time, we didn't know what age of children we were getting, hadn't planned in nap time. I sent it to various people on social media and said, "What do you think?" And they went, "And when are you going to sleep? Do laundry? Do this?" And it kind of made me get to grips after that sort of horrific initial response of, I don't really know what I'm going to do with a couple of children day in, day out, other than scream into a pillow and feel totally overwhelmed. And that did help. But actually, my social worker was quite good in mentally preparing me for some of the things. I think she picked up that I didn't know what I was doing. Oh. But she asked some really insightful questions that really got us thinking about what we wanted. What initially, because when we first started looking into adoption, we'd hit our 40s. And I think this was before age discrimination stuff came out and everything, but it appeared to be, when we looked at it, the website suggested that the council wouldn't allow greater than a 40-year age gap between you and your children. So when we looked at it and realised how old we'd be when we hit the end of the process, we thought, well, we're looking at school-age kids, looking at 5 and 6-year-olds sort of thing. And then the social worker came along and went, "Well, that's not true anymore." We're like, "Oh, okay." And then she asked us lots of questions about, you know, actually, what age do you really want? And I'd actually, unlike lots of adopters, I never really wanted the baby experience, you know, the from birth thing that lots of people, and I can see why people hope for that, because I think as a maybe an expectation or an anticipation that if you get a child very young, that they'll have experienced less trauma and therefore there'll be less problems down the line. Or they really want to have that almost as if they gave birth to them experience, for having everything but the pregnancy, kind of. They've got all those baby pictures and that whole life story is more in their remit. I don't know. But I've never been all that signed up for that. I don't know. Maybe because I like my sleep too much. I don't know. It sounds a bit selfish, doesn't it? I quite like a lot of sleep, so I don't really want a baby. But our social worker really sort of got us to assess, actually, if children came and during the process of attachment, would that be easier or harder if they're going to school full time and everything? And she asked lots of insightful questions that made us sort of change our mind a little bit and go for preschool children, just for that sort of immersive bonding experience that you can have when you first adopt a child and become a parent. And I think actually that was the right thing for us in the end.
Yeah. So you sort of you get through panel and you then move into matching, and how was that?
No, well, we didn't actually because our panel was delayed. By the time we were ready for panel, we went for panel and matching on the same day. So we'd already gone through the matching process pre-approval, because that was, you know, it was a few years ago before they had this stage process. And it wasn't that common at the time. But yeah, we went for approval and matching on the same day, which is a big kind of double, hopefully double yes. Yeah.
No pressure.
No, I know. but yeah, matching, I think, was the point where it became really real. And where I had a very visceral reaction. Our social worker came along with three profiles of sibling pairs on this one day and sort of said, are you ready to consider matching? And sort of sat us down and we read through them. And just honestly, that day is just deeply ingrained in my psychological experience of, it's just the reaction that I had was very difficult to explain. You know, I felt very weird about the children that I didn't kind of click with. And then I felt deeply connected to some that I did click with. And then I was very lost in thought about, is this the right thing? Am I just kidding myself? It's kind of like that. And this sounds like a trivial analogy. It was when you're looking for a new house and you walk in somewhere and it just feels like the right place. And these two children, when I read them, I just went, oh goodness. And I had like proper goosebumps, shivers down. I couldn't look at anyone because I felt that my face was just bright red or something, or that people would know. And then the social worker, I passed them over to Auntie and he read them like one at a time. And then the social worker asked, what do you think? And I couldn't actually speak because I was so scared that he would say none of them or the first set when I wanted the third set. And I was so worried about there being a disconnect between our psychological, physical or thought-based reactions, you know, because he's quite cerebral, whereas I'm quite emotional, impulsive. And I was quite worried that, you know, when we've gone house hunting, I fall in love with the house. And then he's like, oh, I don't think so. Look at all the things that are wrong with it. And then I have to kind of gradually convince him that this is a good idea. Well, that's what had happened in the house we were living in at the time. And I was kind of concerned that there would be a mismatch in those reactions during matching. But when he said, yeah, the third set, it feels like there's just something about them. I was just like, hallelujah. I felt like it was chorus and doves and it was all like gospel choir. I was just like, my whole body just went, oh, I don't know how to speak. But yeah, it was just, I can still feel it now, even talking about it. It was just this incredible experience of destiny or God to creation or something that just felt like we were meant to be, which was just extraordinary and unexpected and weird and powerful. And then I spent ages trying to work out whether I picked up a single word in the profile or, you know, it's that like you start double guessing yourself going, what is going on? Because, I mean, I think we've talked about it before online, is that you're very vulnerable at this point. You know, you're very vulnerable to, you've got these huge hopes and dreams for being a family. And then these real faces and names and personalities appear on paper. And to some extent, you're swayed very much by how good the social worker describes these children. You know, what words they use and the set, you know, it's weird to think that it's a total marketing piece. And actually, if they'd have had a worse picture or a different picture or they'd used slightly different words, would I have felt the same? You know, and I don't know. But there was something about these two that just like went, yeah. And we kind of went, and she went, you don't have to tell us now. And I was like, no, I want to tell you. She went, well, think about it for 24 hours and tell me in the morning, and that kind of thing. But yeah, it was very strong matching process. And I feel for people who spend a lot of time going through that process, not finding the child or children that they want and things, whereas we literally just had one evening with three sets of siblings and we picked one there and then.
Yeah. It's an incredibly surreal part of the journey, isn't it? Massive lifelong implications on what come down to very mundane decisions. Not mundane, absolutely, but very routine or bureaucratic decisions.
I know, and I think because before then we'd done the sort of the table of things that you would accept or could consider and wouldn't consider, and that includes, you know, really difficult questions like has had parent or whose parents had schizophrenia, and we had to do a lot of research into what does that mean, how is it diagnosed, what is the chances of it being passed on to children, could we cope with that? And that was where the real soul searching, the difficult thing of saying, just what am I prepared to handle? What do I think I can cope with? What does this mean? How does this match with, because that's a real bit where the dream of having children really rubs up hard against the reality of the children that are available for adoption, and you start to kind of go, how do these two things morph into something that still feels right for us and our family? And, you know, and I felt really shallow sometimes saying would not consider against some of those options. I just went, what does this say about me? If my child was born like this, would I not still love them? And, you know, and I found that quite a difficult process to go through. I think that was the hardest thing out of the whole adoption process, was really coming up against my own capabilities and my own thoughts, maybe prejudices, judgments about some of these children. And how I felt that reflected either well or badly on myself. You know, it's kind of like, what do you mean you won't take a child who's in a wheelchair? And it's like, well, I live in a 3-story house with lots of stairs and I haven't got the money to move. But, and yet it felt like a damning thing to tick a box saying I would not consider that child.
Yeah. So you went to panel, panel matched you? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and then so you wait a few weeks and you're in an introduction.
9 days. Yeah, 9 days from doing panel, getting two ticks and suddenly meeting these children.
So tell me about introductions through into kind of early life as a family.
Yeah, introductions were magical, exhausting, hilarious, stressful, it was just such an incredible roller coaster. You know, meeting them for the first day, we sat outside. I got there massively early. If you ever know me, and people who've read my book will know that I tend to be like stupidly early for things. Andy is very much on the on time stroke late for things. So I got my way and we were there 45 minutes early. Because we had quite a long trip on a motorway and I didn't want to get stuck in traffic and be late. I was paranoid about being late. We were there stupidly early. Spent 45 minutes in the car thinking, what if they don't like me? What if they ignore me? You know, all these weird things that go around your head because you want it to be the very first time you meet them. You want it to be a magical experience, but you know that they don't really care. You know, they're toddlers. You're just somebody who turns up on their doorstep that they don't really know very well. And I guess that's what I was worried about. But yeah, we had this incredible thing where we came into the lounge and sat down and they said, oh, we're just doing something. And then my daughter came in with a massive bunch of flowers and said, flowers for my mummy. And I totally lost it, burst into tears because she'd said that word. You know, the word I've been waiting to hear all my life, that I thought it would take months, you know, because people talk about it, that it'll take months before they really see you as their parent or their mummy and say those words, so like 4 words in. I was in tears and it was on the floor, which was a great idea. I was on the sofa sobbing. He's on the floor letting them crawl all over him. And I just thought, yeah, he's got this parenting thing lost. I haven't. So they were pulling his glasses off and putting stickers on him and all that. Because he was down at their level. He immediately went down to their level. But yeah, it was amazing and tricky because the foster carers, it was their first set of children they'd look after and they were deeply, deeply attached to them. So I found one of the hardest things during that process of introductions was dealing with the whole gamut of emotions that I was going through, that the foster carers were going through, that the children were going through, because they were doing that attach, reattach, detach process that I don't feel like anyone really warned us about. And, you know, I think the first day we left, my daughter stood on the doorstep and said, "Please don't go." And my heart, my little heart broke. I was just like, oh God, this poor girl and what she's going through and this whole like experience. So yeah, it was very intense and amazing and wonderful and tiring and exhausting. And yeah, and I think we'd seen how wonderfully settled they were and how they loved their foster carers and how what a great routine they had. And it was really settled at the foster carers. And I think what really surprised us when they came home, when they came to our house and lived with us, was how that routine didn't work. It wasn't, they just didn't settle. They didn't sleep. They didn't want to nap. It's because, you know, even though we'd washed everything in the same laundry liquid and done all the stuff that you're supposed to do, and we stuck to the routine and we followed the same process, we weren't their foster carers, and they could tell internally and externally that this was a very different environment. And it wasn't quite the same. In fact, because the foster carers lived at a distance, we'd spent quite a lot of time trailing in the car to and fro. And every time we got in the car to go anywhere after that, my daughter would ask, "Are we going back now? Or are we going to the foster carer's house?" And we go, "Not today." And this happened for about a week. And then one day she goes, "I'd like to go back now." And that was a real vocalization of all this experience she's going through. You know, the novelty's worn off. It's not the same. It's for her, everything she knew had changed. And as much as she wanted a mummy and daddy and said she wanted a mummy and daddy were happy in many ways, there was a huge, you know, loss going on in her life of what she knew and what she felt comfortable with and the way they were with her. And, you know, chances are her foster carers knew what they were doing better than we did and were a bit more relaxed about being parents and had spent, you know, over a year with them and everything like that. So, yeah, I think, I mean, it was, in a way, it was good that she vocalised that because it gave us insights that, you know, her brother couldn't have done because he was younger, so he didn't have those sort of words. But I imagine was going through a very similar thought process. You know, this is a very strange experience for them as children. It was strange for us. Suddenly, you know, we've got two children and we've got all this time. Luckily, Andy had like he took 6 weeks off work on paternity leave, so we had the 2 weeks of introduction and 4 weeks where we were both at home together, and that was really helpful. But I remember him going back to work and just going, "Please don't go back to work, I can't do this on my own," because that's how I felt so overwhelmed even with the two of us. I was just like going, "There's no way I'm going to be able to do this on my own." But, you know, somehow I pulled through.
Yeah, I mean, they can be really difficult days, can't they, for adoptive parents? But that's not necessarily what friends and family and people want to hear.
No, they always want the happily ever after. Isn't this amazing? What a wonderful job you're doing. Aren't your children lucky? Kind of fairy tale that is so superficial and misunderstands the whole process of adoption and loss and trauma. And, you know, the way that I roll my eyes when people go, "Oh, isn't it a wonderful thing you're doing? And aren't those children lucky?" is I find it really hard to just nod my head and go, "Yes, isn't it? And aren't they?" Because, you know, for all that I am, I'm not their birth parents, and they haven't been lucky. They've been through some extraordinarily difficult circumstances, and I don't think lucky is the word I would like to attach to that experience in any way. I think it's wrong. And it just shows a lack of empathy and that whole like, "Oh, isn't it a wonderful thing you're doing?" It just rubs up against me in a way that I don't feel comfortable with it at all. I don't like that raising adoptive parents onto pedestals thing, because I don't think that's a true reflection of what we do or why we do it or what our experience is. And it also feeds that whole, like, you're rescuing them thing that I knew when we went to meet them at foster carers, I wasn't rescuing them because they were in a loving family. They were in a loving environment and there was nothing they needed rescuing from in that environment. You know, so it's, yeah, there's some of the narrative is very unhelpful and dated and a bit Disney-ish. And I think to some extent it is about parenting anyway. The isn't parenting wonderful and I've enjoyed every moment of it narrative really. It's so unrealistic. And quite honestly, if you've been thrown up over three times before breakfast, really you love every single second of it? No. I mean, there are times where I didn't love it. And I think it's almost dangerous to peddle back both to parents and adopters that this is all only amazing and it is a very one-sided, happily ever after experience because it's simply not true. Let me say, my experience of many of the people that I connect with online haven't experienced that. I shouldn't make a big grand statement of that nobody lives happily ever after because that's not what I'm trying to say either. I just think that sometimes the picture is portrayed in an inaccurate way. The idea, one of the phrases that I keep seeing is that, you know, I loved you from the moment I met you or saw your face kind of thing, you know, like that first love thing across the dance floor. And actually, for some people, that's simply not true. It took my husband a long time to bond. And actually, if the expectation is that you love them like really deeply and inexorably, you know, right from the start, and then people don't feel like that, then they feel there's something wrong with them. And it was only when I sort of admitted to a friend of mine, I said, you know, my husband just said, I don't think I love you, because he hadn't got to that point yet. And she said, yeah, my husband said the same thing. And I said, don't make me choose, because you'll lose. But isn't it interesting that unless people are having that honesty and that admission and saying, actually, it takes time to feel A, okay as being a parent, and B, for that bond to grow beyond just a superficial kind of you look cute and aren't you nice, and you know, and because I want to care for you, because that's just a nurturing role that parents, adults have over young children, but actually growing to really love them at a really deep and meaningful level is not an instant thing. Well, maybe it is for some people.
There's no one size fits all, is there? Thinking about, so obviously that's a while ago that they came to live with you and you sort of started this family. And what have you seen sort of in changes in you across, how many years ago was it? Sorry.
Seven and a bit now.
So the Emma of 7 years ago versus the Emma now, what's happened?
I think I was naive as an adopter, despite all the training and all the reading and all the things that you believe that you're told or that you read about trauma and attachment and everything like that. I believed rather too strongly in the love conquers all strategy. That's all they need is a loving set of parents who love them unconditionally, and then everything will be all right. Excuse me. I think I didn't realise how much I would need to battle with school, and how school and education and their experience at school would be such a huge, huge part of being their parents and supporting them and getting them the help and support they needed. I didn't realise that at all. Quite honestly, I just thought you sent kids to school and it didn't really matter. You just pick one nearest to you. And I know people have that sort of Ofsted timetable and everything like that. You know, who's got the best Ofsted rating? Turns out that's the least of my concerns. And I think I've learned a huge amount about by reading and going on courses and recognizing my own failings as a parent or my own triggers and what my children needed that was different to what I'd experienced. And I think the biggest thing is that I cannot be the parent my parents were. I think that's probably the biggest, because my parents parented in a reward and sanction and boundaries and clear, and there is no flexibility in this. And they were, you know, not particularly, they were strict-ish, but that actually everything that I've seen other people do is not necessarily relevant or helpful to my children. And that took quite a lot of unlearning and acceptance of the fact that we were going to have to do things radically differently. And as more sort of voices join the fray, there are things I wish I'd known earlier. I wish I'd known more about Sarah Lloyd's work earlier, because we're getting some really good results from that. But I just think if I'd have done that when they were 2 and 3, that would have been so much easier and more powerful and more relevant. But, you know, she hadn't written a book then, so that's hindsight. What a wonderful thing. But there's a lot I've learned, and there's a lot still to learn. I have no doubt about it. And I think I hadn't realised how much I was going to have to learn and teach myself and become an expert in this. I think I presumed that teachers and people who worked in education would know more than me. But that doesn't seem to be the case. I've had to become the expert my children need in order to give them the right start, to fight for the things that they need, to understand their needs better, and to make sure they get the support that they want to thrive in education and elsewhere.
That's really honest and, an interesting journey, isn't it? It's not necessarily what you anticipated from 7 years ago or however many years ago you started. So kind of my last question really is, would you do it again? Would you put yourself on this journey again if, knowing what you know now, would you go back?
Yeah, absolutely. I would be more prepared. I would like to be more prepared. I would like to know more and start the way that I'm parenting now earlier. I would like to have put in some of the activities we're doing now earlier. Even just tummy time, watching telly on their stomachs, who knew that would be such a life-changing experience? I didn't know any of this stuff. So, yes, I would, because I love them dearly. They are the most incredible children. They're loving and kind, and on the days where they light up and do incredible things and it amazes us all and amaze themselves. I love the times when they amaze themselves and they do things and they're like, look at this. It's an absolute joy to behold. And the times that they do things well in school and I go along as their proud mum and I cry all the way through the assembly, even before my child's even got near the front. No, I wouldn't have missed the emotional experience is intense. There are higher highs and much lower lows than I'd anticipated. It's tested me beyond limits that I knew I was capable of being tested to. You know, if you'd have asked me, this is how hard it's going to be, I'd have gone, that looks pretty extreme. I'm not sure I could cope with that. But it's like lots of life, isn't it? You don't know what you're capable of until you're there and you're... absolutely. They're brilliant. I love them very, very much. And they make me giggle and laugh and sometimes grit my teeth and tut louder than I should do. But, they're amazing. And I'm a better person for being their parent.
I think that's a fantastic place to perhaps end. Thank you so much for being so honest and open and look after yourself. And I hope everything continues to go swimmingly.
Thank you very much, Al.